Blog Talk Radio.
Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. Today is Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. The call-in number is 347-857-3293. Isolated history is no history at all. Why today's war, or rumors of war? We say no to war. Bring all the troops home, end the wars, end the sanctions.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. On this Tuesday, January the 14th. The new year. And so let us continue, and as I always continue with the program, is what I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. Now, my brothers and sisters, when we talk about Isolated history is no history at all. That means if you don't know where a fact is put in the history of a nation, you don't know the history. And a few examples of why people are willing to go to war over and over again. We look at the war in Iran. Well, if American people knew the history of American interference in the Iranian national issues, there would be no question as to why Iran does the things it does. And as we mentioned last week, the democratically elected president of Iran, Mossadegh, wanted to use the profits from oil for the Iranian people. British Petroleum, and that was a consortium of various oil companies, wanted to give them a low cut on the dollars that was a result of Iranian oil. Mossadegh said no. The American CIA overthrew him and put in the Shah of Iran. That began recent history of America involved in Iranian politics. The people overthrew the Shah of Iran, but the importance of recognizing what happened with the Shah of Iran was when America wanted to make the Iranians the boogeymen. They're big guys in the Middle East that control the Middle East. The Iranians didn't have the money to buy the weapons. They didn't have the army. And so Mr. Kissinger, who was supposedly the smartest man in the White House, as a presidential aide, the smartest man in Washington, he suggested that they raise the price of oil so that the Iranians could afford to buy American weapons. Now, at the same time he did that, one of the Harvard-educated kings of the Faisal of Saudi Arabia, that family, one of the educated young men who had gone to Harvard Business School and did very well, said to the American government, if you do that, you will destabilize world economy. They did it anyway, and they destabilized world economy, and American corporations got very rich selling weapons to the Iranians. And when the Shah was overthrown, they needed a new boogeyman. And so they installed, these are the American CIA, they installed Saddam Hussein of Iraq. But then when Saddam Hussein of Iraq got too big, they had to overthrow him, and then they installed a government in Iraq. But now we see the government in Iraq has told the Americans that they want them out of the Middle East. And so you see this history of America taking over countries to have boogeymen to control for the American interest has been going on a long time, and I dare say very few people understand that. And so we progress at this moment to how the American people do it, and fake news did not start with Trump. We see real fake news on the news, and you can check this out. When you look at your TV, look at the big crowds, supposed big crowds, that you see supporting the Americans and Israelis in Iran. Well, if you look closely, you see there are small crowds, and the movie is played over and over from different angles, even from above, from a side. And the crowds are not really big. That is fake news, and you can check it out right now because it's still going on. If you turn on your TV and look at those supposed large crowds of people in Iran supporting America and Israel, you will see, look at the shoes. You'll see the same shoes over and over again, and it's like marching a group in a parade, but they do it through cameras. Fake news. Here's another fake news. Do you know about the national strike, the communist Marxist strike in India? No, you don't. Nobody. The corporate media does not talk about it. Do you understand how significant a national strike is? And it's a communist, it's a Marxist strike in India. But you don't hear it. The corporate news isn't going to tell you about it. That's fake news. And I could go on and on about how they misrepresent the truth. When I talk about Iraq, dare I speak of Bush and Blair? They lied about the whole thing. Colin Powell at the UN, all lies. And those people who knew the truth, they put in jail. And so we wonder what's happening in Iraq. And I can go on. Many of the American soldiers think when they went to Afghanistan, to Vietnam, Iraq, that they were fighting for the American people. No, they weren't. They were fighting for the corporate interest. And the corporations are going to continue, and there's going to be continue a separation of economies. That is, the rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer. That's the divisions we will be looking at in the new year, and we will continue to work to free our political prisoners. But as we start every program, we lighten up a little bit by giving you political information through poetry. And I've been reminded that the news you do not get is we don't talk about health care. We mentioned it last week. We don't talk about education. We don't talk about housing. We don't talk about immigration. We allow the government to get away with murder. We don't talk about how fracking is affecting Puerto Rico, how it is actually creating the earthquakes that are destroying Puerto Rico. We don't talk about Naomi Klein's of economic understanding of disaster capitalism. These are the things that the corporation should be talking about, and when they don't talk about it, it's fake news, fake media. But we look to give you real media, real news, and we're going to begin tonight with news through poetry. Professor Louis, are you there? Your mic is open.
Yeah, okay. Burning, the young blood went in. Oh, you hear me?
We can hear you.
Burning, the young bloods went in burning. There was no turning back, Jack, down at Broadway and Grand. They had their Jim Johnsons in their hand. In a heartbeat, Rover, it was over. No one called Jehovah. The blood ran red, but the gold had fled. The whistle was blown, but the money had flown. The roller showed, but everyone had blowed with a tremendous stash, thousands in cash that didn't last too long, that was spent and gone after getting it on for three solid weeks of big-time freaks, three solid weeks of party that was much more than hearty. New music, new clothes, new treats to put up the nose, new girls, new smoke, new pills, new coke, but the dues that had to be paid, the sure enough blues when you're not afraid of the trap that was laid, the cage that was made for animals but filled with men, gone to the pen, some never going to see the street again, buried alive in a hard rock jail, had to survive, no mail, no bail, buckets of tears, locked up for years, bricked up, tricked up, and sent up to die once the people could fly. But by and by, now it's clubs and chains, oceans of pain. The wasted lives pile one on top the other. Once a month visit from your mother and brother, a living, breathing fatality in the hard, white hands of brutality. No family, no friends, no chance to make amends, nothing to defend, all coming to an end in the big house upstate, behind iron gates in the cold steel jaws of the penitentiary, where we finally got to pause, cause it's elementary to know, fast or slow, when the young warriors feel the heat of the street through their feet, feel the need to beat sometimes and not always lose, feel the blues rising under the skin, the news coming in, maybe we can win. Then now's the time to tell that we must study well the world around us, the darkness and power that surround us, trick bags shining in the sun, know well which way to run, know well which way to point the gun. If the weight must fall, and fall it must, don't let it fall right back on us. Before you dance out on the warpath in your trance or romance, better do the math. Before you step out with your truly righteous anger, don't be another headbanger in a bar, some little ripoff of Ma and Pa, a little run for the money that won't go far. Before you step out with your truly righteous hatred, don't let it be you who's got to pay for it. Lost in a world with nothing for you, there is always something that you can do. The children need you, and you know it's true. You can let the children judge you. Grandma down the block needs you a lot, and you can let the children judge you. Your brother needs you, what you gonna say, and you can let the children judge you. Your sister needs you every day, and you can let the children judge you. Your daddy needs you, don't throw it away, and you can let the children judge you. Your mama needs you in every single way, and you can let the children judge you. All the children, near and far, the children need you out of the bar. The children need you with or without a car. The children need you just like you are, and you can let the children judge you.
Well, thank you, Professor Louis. We can listen to this over and over again because that is quite a message. Thanks again, and we must pass this on to the younger generation in a manner that it's easier for them to listen to. Thanks again, Professor Louis. Next, we have a gentleman from Rochester, New York, a comrade, a friend, who has been active with us and when we weren't around on his own behalf. He's been to St. Louis, Ferguson. He's been around the country fighting this struggle for justice. And so happy to say that he has won an election up in Rochester, one of the industrial centers, which we hope will become an example for other industrial centers like Flint and Detroit and places where there's no education and the water is poisoned. Ricardo Adams, he won the election. He's just back from a demonstration in Albany. Ricardo Adams, give us a little something of your history and whatever you feel is relevant for this evening. Ricardo Adams, your mic is open.
And you can let the children judge you. That's I want to start with that because our children are in a dire crisis up here, and I'm going all out to do what I can. But the fake news and all that, the underfunding this system is doing, it's like crushing the education system up here. We're in a dire situation, and if you look at history, if you know the history, there's never been a situation like this. But yet they're trying to act like this is just how it goes. No, this ain't never how it went, especially if it's in a community that ain't where there's a whole lot of black and brown kids. You know, it's the reality of it. And it's a fight. I went to Albany hoping to get our money. Came back without it. I came back without it. So it means I'm going to have to go back again. Doing nothing is not an option. I got to win because the kids are going to judge me if I don't. I've got a lot in common with the kids. You know, I grew up in poverty. I didn't even graduate in school. I got a GED in Comstock.
Comstock is a prison, folks, in New York.
It's a prison. It's a prison. I was a client of the school-to-prison pipeline. I've actually been homeless. And so this is what the kids in Rochester are going through. So I identify with them. And so now we're at a place where the funding for the district is, like, we're underfunded. We're in the whole deficit, $32 million. Don't make no difference. The money wasn't wasted. It may have been mismanaged. We may have spent what we didn't have, but that's not the way to look at it. We still have to fund the schools for the kids, and none of the money was wasted. We've never had enough money. They always pretend like we're spending too much. No, we ain't spending too much on the kids that look like me. We don't have enough. When you look at some of the statistics on poverty, in Rochester, childhood poverty, we're like the second worst in the country. Not in the state, in the whole country. So it's a crisis here, and I just need everybody to keep talking about it, because Cuomo ain't paying us no attention. The kids are out rallying. The kids went with us to Albany. Last night they did a state of the student response to Cuomo's lack of talking about education in his state of the state. And I got to do what I can do, but I just need support. I need everybody to talk about it. I need the New York representatives to talk about it when they go back in session. I need everybody on board with this. This ain't some normal crisis. It's bad. We just cut 100 or something teachers in the middle of the year, in December. We cut 100 or something teachers, a bunch of teachers' aides, other non-teaching staff, and we're getting and that was only to probably do one-fifth of the money that we have to the gap that we have to close. So we're talking tonight about closing more schools, two schools this year, two schools next year, probably a lot more teachers. It's crushing our education system here in Rochester, and nobody cares. Albany doesn't care. And I just wanted the word to get out, and maybe some support will come our way. We're in a situation where things have happened in this country where people thought never would happen. You never thought that they would bomb a city like they did in Philly on the MOVE organization. You never thought Rodney King, the police, would have got acquitted. Things happen, man. I never would have thought they would let our education system here in Rochester get this bad. We need some help. Don't believe
he interrupts
help is
coming. A minute. And would you tell us how we can get in contact with you? Would you spell it out on the air here?
So I have a cell phone that I always pretty much answer. My cell phone number is 585-615-1626. I need all the support
585-1626. And let me tell you, people, this is a bright light in our struggle for decent education and for decency in general, because this, when you have someone who understands and who is willing to fight and is on your side, that's the beginning of a victory. And so we have the beginning of a victory in Ricardo Adams and his wife Mary. They've been fighting for a long time, and we got to jump in and support them. Sister Betty and I will be working to support the people in Rochester. And remember, Rochester was an industrial city, one of the highest paid system for teachers in New York State, and the lowest in terms of what our children get. Children of color are 5 times more likely to be arrested to go to prison, not because of what they did, because of what they didn't know and the education they didn't get. So let's remember, repeat that one more time, Ricardo, how we get in touch with you.
585-615-1626. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ricardo, and we're putting out his speech, his acceptance speech when he was elected. It is beautiful, and you got to look to that. Check out his organization. Check out his name. We're on the move, and we're going to improve things. Next up, we're going to move to Chicago from Rochester, New York. Joe Perry from Chicago, is your mic is open. Have any words of wisdom for us?
Yeah, hi, Ralph and Betty. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I don't know if people heard. It's been, you know, it's kind of been a news blackout here in Chicago about it. But this morning, there's a group called Moms for Housing out in California, and those moms were they had taken over housing, basically. You know, with these real estate companies doing, some of these shell companies, they go and they purchase large numbers of real estate, and then they flip them in order to make money. And so these women were home, basically homeless, and they took it over. And they've been in a running battle with these real estate people for about the last 2 or 3 months. You know, and so they literally were just kicked out. They came down on them with a SWAT team this morning, right at the break of dawn, came down on them and removed them from the house. So I want to try and talk about the comments I want to make is basically, you know, in support of these women and support all the efforts that are going on all across the country right now to build homeless unions and to make sure that Americans get into some housing. So anyway, you know, you can really talk about this for a long time, but I wrote an editorial for the People's Tribune. This is a paper that I work for, that I write for. People's Tribune, we're based here in Chicago. And this is coming from an article. It's called Real Estate Profits Homeless Die. Basically what happened was right about the first week and a half of 2020, this year, so last week, I'm listening to you know, there's a radio show here on WBBM Radio. It's called, comes on every noon. It's called Noon Business Hour. And the reason why I like to listen to it is so, you know, you kind of keep track of what are these corporate folks doing. So there was a guy on there by the name of Mark Hulbert, who's an investment columnist for Wall Street Journal, for Barron's, and for MarketWatch.com. And so he was asked during the interview, like, in his opinion, what was the more profitable investment? Was it stocks or was it real estate? And then the way he chose to answer the question, let me just quote it to you. He said, well, if one were to press me into a bet for the next decade, I think I'd bet on real estate over stocks, right? That's basically what he had to say. So a couple of days later, during the same show, they're reporting that this company, Deloitte, which is an international service corporation, had just done a survey. They surveyed major corporate CFOs, chief financial officers, and 97% of the chief financial officers of the major American corporations all said that they're expecting for there to be a recession in 2020. And 35% of those who were interviewed or who were polled, right, in the survey said that they're looking to layoffs. They want to start doing layoffs as a defensive measure against it. All right, so keep those two things in mind. And then during the same period of time, and some of you may have heard about it, but it was reported in the national news that three homeless people in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, their names were Christina Fowler, 53 years old, Gregory Corcoran, 40 years old, and Tony Williams, 50 years old. They were all shot in their sleep as they slept on the streets in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And you could argue that if these folks weren't homeless, if they were up in a house, they'd probably still be alive. Okay, so let's take and connect the dots of these things, right? When corporations buy housing, the last thing on their mind is any kind of a human right that people would have to housing, right? Their only concern is to make profits. So they accomplish that by keeping their properties vacant. And this law of supply and demand on the market where if you remove items from the market, the supply goes down, the demand goes up. That means the price goes up. And so literally what they do is they buy large swaths of housing, be it rental or be it, you know, houses for sale, and then they keep them off the market, right, until the price gets up to a point where they feel like, okay, it's expensive enough, we're going to make our good profit now, right? And then they put it on the market, right? And what this has done is created a situation in the country where in a lot of cities – you've got more vacant units of housing than you actually have homeless people. Oakland, California, where this incident just took place that I was telling you about, where they put the moms out. I mean, they forcibly went in there with the SWAT teams to put these moms out. Oakland, California has 3.8 vacant units for every homeless person, okay? And this is so lucrative that the Census Bureau reports that 3 million homes and 13 million rental apartments in the United States are owned by these LLC, LP, and LLP shell corporations. A lot of times that's all they are, the shell corporations, so you really can't tell who owns them. Now, keep that in mind and match that against the fact that there's 4.4 million Americans sitting on HUD waiting lists for housing, right? And many of them are homeless. And HUD claims that they've got 5,035,824 units, right? And out of that numbers, a little bit over a half million units, a full almost 10% of those, 453,000 of their units, are offline because they need repairs, right? And so take one look at HUD's budget. HUD has just, Ben Carson has just, you know, he's got their budget for 2020. And in this new budget for 2020 for HUD, the budget's been cut $9.6 billion. Right, and a big part of that, or I just mean symbolically, not maybe in terms of money, but a big part of that that tells you what's going on is that part of that budget is called capital funds, and capital funds are repairs to units so that you can make them occupancy ready. That was slashed to zero. So literally, what they're telling you is, all right, we got 10% of our units are vacant, but we're not going to spend any money on fixing them up. Well, this informs you right away they're in lockstep with the private corporations in order to do what? Help keep public, you know, housing in general, but public housing, you know, offline, and then housing in general too expensive for people to be able to afford it. All right, so let's step back for a second. If there's a recession coming in 2020 that leads to mass layoffs, and with that you got this continued practice of these corporations keeping housing vacant so that they can make all kinds of profit by it being the most expensive housing around, right? And at the same time, you're ensuring that there's a lack of public housing, then what you're doing is you're promising 2020 to be a perfect storm for a sharp increase in homelessness, and that means more needless deaths on the street. And let me tell you, if you live in a place like Chicago, you live in Detroit, you live in Milwaukee or the Twin Cities, if you're homeless on the street in the middle of wintertime, that could be a death sentence for you. And it is a death sentence for a lot of people. And so I think we need to ask ourselves, and this is what I thought about as I was going through this. I remember in 2012, in the summer of 2012, hearing on the news that they had buried 165 homeless people on the same day in pauper's graves in Homewood, Illinois, which is a suburb of Illinois, and caskets went into the ground. You know, the bodies went in the ground and the caskets had, you know, they bore the words on the casket that said, known only to God, because nobody knew who these folks were, right? And nobody cared and didn't want to do anything about it. And so I'm putting to people, do we want to go through that again, but for the whole country, not just, you know, like Chicago, but like that's exactly what goes on all over the country? Or maybe should we celebrate life of these folks who've been martyred by the system and fight like hell for the people who are still living? And, you know, right now, the homeless, they need tents, they need blankets, they need warm food, they need all the necessities of life. They need that, like, right now. But I think starting tomorrow, if we don't want to be in some kind of generational fight around this where our kids and grandkids are still fighting the same fight, we need to do everything possible to make it necessary for the homeless to have what they need to build a movement of survival that's going to house all Americans and end homelessness forever. So on that note, I'd like to end my comments and thank you, Betty and Ralph.
Thank you so much, Joe Perry. We say we bring you the news. This isn't fake news. Everything else is fake news. And keep in mind, People's Tribune, Joe Perry, Chicago. This is the real news. Dial it up on your computer to get the real deal. Thanks again, Joe. Next up, Paul Gilman, the Green Party. Paul, your microphone is open.
Hey, Ralph. Hey, Betty. How you doing?
Hey,
okay.
We're waiting.
Right.
We're waiting for words of wisdom.
There are various contradictions within the pot movement, but right now I'd like to talk about the police response to legalizing pot and how they want to supervise or oversee all the various, like, new dispensaries. This was inspired by a Chicago Sun-Times article. Chicago cops will be monitoring dispensaries on January 1st, but they won't be looking to bust people for getting high outside. Okay, so in other words, Chicago on January 1st had legalized pot. They had $3.1 million in sales on the first day, and the cops are obsessing over it, standing there watching over everybody. You know, like they lost the battle, and now, you know, they just can't get away with it. So let's start with what's wrong with the dispensary, okay? An eighth of an ounce of medical marijuana subject to 1% pharmaceutical tax typically costs around $60 in Illinois dispensaries. That price will be substantially higher for recreational users who will soon face state taxes between 10 and 25% for pot products. Chicagoans can currently find an eighth of an high-quality ounce of cannabis for as cheap as $30 on the street, according to Budzoo, a website that aggregates weed prices. Okay, in other words, the black market pot will actually be cheaper than, you know, the official pot. So legal weed should be cheaper than black metal pot, black market pot, and even free. The Green Rush bourgeois, with the help of the sniveling politicians who couldn't care less about anything but their own careerism, which means making sure the class and race divide continues in the pot movement as they do in all other aspects of society, are a tandem that has nothing to do with any part of the authentic cannabis culture. Historically, the cannabis culture breaks down class and race barriers. You know, we pass around the joint. We share pot. Pot is usually shared. Yes, people deal it and sell it, but once you get it, it's always meant to be shared with people, you know, even strangers. Go to a concert and people are passing around the joint. So move on to this, right? From the Chicago Sun-Times, any officer who has a dispensary on their beat, they're going to make contact with that business and they're going to be maintaining a heightened presence while they're not answering other calls for service. This is not about protecting the, now this is about the quote, end of quote. This is not about protecting the dispensaries or the public. This is about cops' neurotic obsession with pot. Legalizing pot undermines the cops' authority. You hear that? Legalized pot undermines the cops' authority. Why? The anti-cannabis pseudoscience that came from the same, oh yeah, that came from the same place that of the racist, all those ethnic theorists that created these fake racial and ethnic hierarchies and they placed themselves at the top. Well, that's where the anti-cannabis science comes from, the same place as that. And, you know, the police created this hysteria. Unlike alcohol prohibition, there was never any popular outcry to make pot legal. So they created all of this pseudoscience in order to keep it illegal, right? And
as I always said, there was never a war on drugs. There was a war on us. And they go through all of these machinations to make sure the war on us continues.
Right, and the cops are not handling it well. The cops are handling pot legalization in the same way that the Wicked Witch of the West is handled water being thrown on her in The Wizard of Oz, you know? The cops' obsession with... Yeah, right? The cops' obsession with pot creates an outlaw love for pot among the public that in itself is neurotic, and an irrational fear among the minority of the people who live in the authoritarian bubble that believes everything the white patriarchal cultural hegemony tells them. In other words, they believe whatever the cops tell them. The public schizophrenia, the voices of the pro-cannabis versus the voice of the anti-cannabis and the cops' own anti-pot neurosis has a recursive effect on the cops and the public that is leading to the mess of corporatized pot monopolies. The cops not only get to keep most of their authority under the new laws, in some ways, with people having to register themselves as pot users and growers, the cops' authority will be increased. The cops' anti-pot obsession has now been morphed into the cops' pseudoscientific position that they were right about how horrible cannabis is all along. But, and if we have to have pot, they get to help the mostly white guardians of the public interest control it, i.e. the corporations. If this system were sane, once pot is legalized, the neurosis would disappear in the midst of bad memories and learned historical studies through allowing homegrown pot to predominate. Pot should be free. The profit motive itself is a form of neurosis that leads to bad practices that passes on the neurosis to the consumers. But then again, this is capitalism, and the dominance of greed and commodification of nature will dominate the renewed pot industry unless we do something about it. Advertising will create the neurosis caused by branding and the usual pompousness that goes along with cheap versus high-end product. Sexism will be reinforced by using bikini models and pot advertising. Like what happened to beer, pot's true beauty will be reduced to lost weekend revelries, various forms of princess and the peace connoisseurship, and into the haze of lifestyle bravado. This is happening, I'm almost finished. This is happening because the cowardly half-steppers in the pro-pot movement are okay with the domination of capital over the needs of the people. The cowardly half-steppers are going along with the Green Rush monopolizers' need to dominate the renewed pot industry as a form of compromise, feeling that in appeasing the authorities, they will get some form of legalized pot. Most of the appeasers are middle class and feel that they will be able to deal with whatever tricks the regulators who are responsible for the needlessly high prices will be put on us. They don't care about the lower classes who have already been alienated from politics, or from their politics anyway, through generations of oppression. And you know, they haven't experienced meaningful reform in a long time. As of now,
well,
the pot movement. Yeah.
We're going to have to cut you off there because you have set them off. And remember, this program is being archived. You can dial it in anytime after tomorrow and hear this information again. It's a lot. Look to have you again next week. Thanks again for educating us a little bit more on pot, or a lot more on pot. Next up, we have Ann Lamb. Ann Lamb, your mic is open.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ralph. I'm also just back from Albany. We had more than 700 people running around the Capitol building today on the issue of parole reform. So it was very nice. We had people from Rochester, Buffalo, New York City, Long Island, Westchester, Syracuse, everywhere. It was amazing to see so many people coming together. It was really nice. We went and lobbied. I actually got to talk to this young guy from Brooklyn who is very progressive. He's already signed on to both of these laws that we're trying to get passed. You know, the presumptive parole where they can no longer say nature of the crime, or, you know, your release at this time would so deprecate, you know, appreciation for the law as to blah, blah, blah. You know, which is the other line they use, stock phrase, which has kept thousands of people, not only our political prisoners, but thousands of people in the state of New York in prison, you know, because they hear it over and over and over again. And these are the people who are least likely to recidivate. We're talking about elders mostly, people who have gotten indeterminate sentences in the past, you know, such as Jaleel, such as Herman Bell, such as Robert Sertes, you know, people who were sentenced back in the 70s and 80s, you know, given these ridiculous draconian sentences. And they're indeterminate. And the state of New York, life means life. It doesn't mean 30 years. It doesn't mean 40 years. It doesn't mean 60 years. It means life. If you go look up, like, the maximum release date for anybody who's been sentenced to whatever to life, it'll say 99 years, 99 months, 99 weeks, 99 days. So I guess if maybe you lived to be like 100, they'd have to let you go. I haven't figured that out yet. But, you know, we've been trying to pass these two laws, you know, together with RAP and the Parole Preparation Project and a whole bunch of other people. A lot of formerly incarcerated people were there. Excellent. People gave their testimonies. They talked. Tariq brought down the house. It was really fantastic. We made a lot of noise. We had a big rally. We take over the $1 million, what they call the $1 million staircase. This thing is amazing. It's like the staircase that goes up five floors. We had all of it occupied with people. So that was great. And you could hear us all over the place. We marched through the whole place. We, you know, chanting, you know, bring them home, right? And made a nice impression. And I think that everybody was very happy to be there. It was really nice to see because it was really a real mix of people. Older people, younger people, people of all colors, people of all races, you know. And it was really, you know, a lot of families gave their testimonies too, you know, how this affects them when their loved one is turned down over and over for parole. So that as long as it's presumptive parole where they could no longer look at the nature of the crime and or the instant offense, as they also like to call it, and they would have to focus on who the person is now.
Okay,
now,
and
you know, that would let a lot of people out. And the other just let me finish briefly, The other law is an elder parole law, which would allow everybody who is 55 years or older, has been in prison for at least 15 years, no matter what their sentence is, to be able to go to the parole board. So that means somebody like David Gilbert, who has 75 years before he even goes to the board, would then be able to go to the parole board. So, you know, that would have a lot of people who have to be given these ridiculous sentences, 50 to life, 75 to life. You know, I mean, that is your life. How many people are going to, even if you were a teenager, if you were sentenced to 75 to life and you were 15, you're looking at being 90 before you're going to go to the parole board. So, you know, that would release a lot of people because most of the people in the prison system now in the state of New York are elders because they were the people who were sentenced back in the day. And so, you know, I think that this movement is really starting to take off and get some attention in Albany. You know, a lot of legislators, these things have been sitting in committee since last year. A lot of people have signed on to them. Really going to try to push them through this year and bring home thousands and thousands of people who have had their lives ruined by this horrible, despicable prison industrial complex.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Ann. But I say, this is Ralph speaking, until we make the demand of the political party that we support that they will not get our vote unless they deal with this issue as we see it fit. This is ending of political slavery. That is giving your vote and not getting political pay. And until we take that hard line, our brothers and sisters are doomed. Thank you again for that report. Let's open up the mic for Tom Syracuse and Sister Shirley and Gwen Goodwin. Hang in there. We're going to get you in. Tom Syracuse, your microphone is open.
Thank you very much. I'd like to talk about not only this unbelievable policy of the Trump administration, but the corporate media that supports it. The Democrat leadership, almost including most of their presidential candidates, response to the reckless assassination of Iran's top general Soleimani was mainly that they were notified before it happened. In fact, most Democrats in Congress voted for the Trump's regime increase in the military budget. And many leftists don't get it. They have this naive notion that Bernie Sanders can push the corporate Democratic Party to the left. This party is just as imperialist as the Republican Party. And supporting Sanders is giving credibility to the Democratic Party. The corporate-controlled mass media gave almost no coverage to the several demonstrations in New York City on Thursday. Spectrum's New York One TV, that supposedly gives 24/7 news of New York City, never even mentioned it. No surprise. I could not attend because of my physical disability, but it seems that the turnout was small. So why didn't the left get together and hold one big demo? I watched Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and her guest Andrew Bacevich, retired Army colonel and professor emeritus of international relations and history at Boston University. He covered the lies about this provocative assassination and said our government should change U.S. policy from a militarist approach to a peaceful one. Is Professor Bacevich for real? Is that the best Amy could do to get an analysis of foreign policy? Yes, we need a change, but it won't come from a government that's committed to capitalism and imperialism. We need a system change, something that I don't ever hear Amy bring up. U.S. capitalism cannot maintain itself without imperialism and a war economy. And the Trump regime can't be that foolhardy to actually invade Iran, a country of 80 million with a well-trained army of 750,000. But Trump already said he will authorize bombing Iran, including its cultural sites. This will have far-reaching consequences throughout the Mideast. Iran has already stated that it will retaliate. And then what? Trump's rationale for his bellicose policy against Iran is that Iran is a terrorist state and he has the responsibility to protect Americans. But the exact opposite will happen. His responsibility is really to maintain capitalism, and that this system makes unbridled greed and profit its own form of terrorism that makes all others look like pikers. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Tom. And as I repeat again, if you want the news, tune in to Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, and hear these wonderful activists, intellectuals, give you the real history and how it is connected. We will go on next to Sister Shirley. Sister Shirley, your mic is open.
Okay. I also like to talk about the rap, releasing aging people from prison. And I too was at the Albany, but we all have to be cognizant of what the real issue is and not just go alone on how we feel about our individual issues, because we did meet with the legislative bodies and some of us not thinking about how it would affect the whole problem as a whole, went on a individual rampage against some of the legislator and cause it to not even be considered something that they would pass. And we can't do that because bottom line, it's not about me. It's not about you. It's about all of us. And you can't go in there wanting them to pass this bill and then, but talking them down, talking against them, telling them they don't care and all this stuff. You can't do that. It defeats the purpose. And we have to be cognizant that we can't just let somebody get away with doing that because it hurts so many of us. And that has happened, and it needs to be put in check. That can't happen again. Okay, I'm sharing that. And then also, I just like to put out there also again about Ramsey Orta. He is still going through the changes that they're putting him through. He's still in the box, and he's not due to get out the box until the 1st of February. And we need to continue to build him up and support him and let the system know that we have him. Okay? Peace.
Well, thank you for that, Sister Shirley. And it is very important that we hear that message. But for a long time, the political message of all of our progressive institutions was all of us or none of us. And as Reverend Pinckney says over and over again, it's not about one thing, it's about everything. And we of the progressive organizations must form a policy which we will support and recognize the policies that we are against. And as Tom says, we can't go on supporting the so-called liberal Democrats who are nothing but a rewrite of the same nonsense of the Democratic Party. But we can cut through that if we have issues and demands of our issues. And when we put that together as a unified left, which we have never had in America, and this is why we opened with the national strike in India. They're getting it together. All industrial nations and non-industrial nations, third world countries, subcontinent, whatever negative name you give to people, they are able to organize on a national level, France, etc. And so we are going to finish our program with a message from Mumia Abu-Jamal.
The fall of empire. Imagine living in almost any country in the world except the United States. Imagine looking at news accounts reporting on the U.S. presidency for the last 2 years. Imagine what millions of people think of the current president and, through him, the American people. Try to imagine how they could see both as anything other than mad. America looks like and sounds like a nation in the throes of madness, loud, abrasive, offensive, addicted to name-calling and an air of meanness. How could they think otherwise? Threatening war one day, loving and praising dictators the next. How can the U.S. empire seem anything other than schizophrenic? It looks like a circus act, like a clown juggling atom bombs. The siren's call to fear, the calls for a wall, are all emblems of the fall of empire. For an empire that cannot reasonably run itself can hardly run or control other states. And even when Donald I leaves his imperial throne, the U.S. will long bear the mark of infamy, for people of the world will have seen the real face of America, one it will not forget. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Thank you for that.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Thank you so much for that. And we must remember, and one of the statements made, America supporting world dictators. And it's not just Trump. We remember Al-Sisi of Egypt. Well,
the duly elected president of Egypt, Mohamed Morsi, died in jail, arrested by el-Sisi, supported by the Americans. Duarte from Philippines, of people. We could go the list. America, we must learn what America really is about, and I pity you.
All the things that I should say, say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. I wish you could know what it means to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man should be free. I wish I could give all I'm longing to give. I wish I could live like I'm longing to live. I wish I could do all the things that I can do, though I'm way overdue. I'd be starting anew. Well, I wish I could be like a bird. Then I'd sing, 'cause I know that.